The following program is brought to you by Unified Lifestyle and sponsored in part by Ascenta Health. The information presented in this show is not intended to provide medical advice and is not necessarily the view of Talk Radio 790 KABC. Always seek your physician's approval before making any lifestyle changes. Now, here is one of Hollywood's most sought-after fitness experts and host of the Grant Roberts Unified Lifestyle Radio Show, Grant Roberts.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Grant Roberts. Today's show, we're answering listener emails. The overwhelming question or comment I received this week had to do with, let's face it, the not-so-shocking news that celebrity chef Paula Deen has type 2 diabetes. However, what some listeners did find shocking was Ms. Deen's announcement to the public that she has no intention of changing her diet or lifestyle. She instead is going to cash in by teaming up with a pharmaceutical company and be a spokesperson to sell drugs to manage diabetes. Please note that is manage, not cure diabetes, because there is no cure, other than the possible reversal of diabetes through nutrition, exercise, and positive lifestyle changes. Now, Ms. Deen has been a diabetic for the last 3 years, but only now has come out of the pantry with the news of her disease. Why now? To announce her endorsement deal with the drug company. Deen acknowledges that she knows little or nothing about diabetes, which strikes me as odd. Wouldn't the first thing a rational person do is attempt to learn about the disease you're diagnosed with? But instead of learning about the disease and making strides to improve her health and lifestyle, she instead has blind faith, pardon the pun, in a pharmaceutical company and has been rewarded with a lucrative contract as a paid celebrity spokesperson. I guess ignorance is bliss, at least until a toe falls off or someone goes blind or dies prematurely. Diabetes is the leading cause of new blindness and the sixth leading cause of death. To show how ubiquitous diabetes has become, worldwide insulin sales have quadrupled in the last decade to $15.4 billion annually, with the company Ms. Deen is now partnered with selling $7.1 billion worth last year. Diabetes is obviously out of control. The tragedy is that the disease is largely preventable. When asked how much money she's being paid, Ms. Deen said, and I quote, "Talking about money is garish. It's tacky. But of course I'm being compensated for my time. That's the way our world works." End quote. If talking about money is tacky, what do you call talking about selling drugs instead of using influence to improve health through better nutrition and lead by example? At a minimum, it is irresponsible. Ms. Deen will instead be cashing checks for living as an example of what not to do, basically encouraging people to do likewise. That is, embrace diabetes, do nothing, and become drug dependent for the rest of your lives. The response to Ms. Deen's capitalization of her own physical demise from other chefs has been largely critical. Anthony Bourdain says he's thinking of getting into the leg-breaking business so he can profit from selling crutches, while others have focused on her style of cooking, saying her heavy use of sugar and butter is to blame. Yet others have said it's sad that Ms. Deen has diabetes and the public or press shouldn't bash her. Well, sorry. What's sad is announcing you have diabetes solely to sell diabetes drugs. Here is a person of some influence who admits that she knows little or nothing about the disease she has, yet has made the conscious decision not to do anything to change her lifestyle or attempt to improve her condition, and instead choose to get paid to abuse her platform and influence to promote selling a drug that is not a cure but at best manages a disease. Type 2 diabetes is typically a consequence of a poor diet and sedentaryism that has become so pervasive they had to change the name. Type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset diabetes, but was changed because now it afflicts children in record numbers. That's what's sad. Ms. Deen's attitude is an affront to everything I stand for, and we should all be offended. Yes, Ms. Deen is entitled to choose to be ignorant on her own accord, but using a national platform to influence others to ignore symptoms and opt for a lifelong regimen of drug use instead of lifestyle change is pathetic. It's bad enough that drug companies are advertising through every possible medium to market their products, but now seeking out ignorant celebrity spokesperson? That's crossing a line. Maybe they should dress her in a lab coat to give her some more credibility. Why are drug companies even allowed to advertise? I have no idea most of the time what the commercials are even for. Drug commercials have taken over the domain of the tampon and beer commercials where everyone is riding horses and having the time of their lives, at least until the end of the commercial where they rattle off contraindications, which may include suicidal tendencies or spontaneous combustion. In magazine ads, you get a glossy, happy picture of someone using drugs, followed by 2 pages of fine print of contraindications. Drug advertising must be stopped. I thought it was an outrage when drug companies' advertisements suggest that you should ask your doctor if the drug is right for you. Why should you ask your doctor? Isn't that your physician's job? If drug companies continue to have their way, you'll be able to self-diagnose and take any drug over the counter. All right, I could rant about this for the entire show. So what is type 2 diabetes? Someone with type 2 diabetes, either the body does not produce enough insulin or their cells become insulin resistant, meaning the cells ignore insulin, basically because the cells simply get tired of being continually asked to store sugar. Carbohydrates break down into sugar. Sugar is converted by the liver into glycogen and it is sent through the bloodstream to be stored in muscle cells. Now that's the catch. We have a very limited capacity to store glycogen. On average, we can only store somewhere around 350 grams. That's the amount of sugar in about 10 cans of Coca-Cola. That's our entire capacity. Now, when the muscle cells are full and you are sedentary, meaning you didn't spend any of the stored glycogen, and you eat a package of, say, Skittles, that's another 47 grams of sugar, about 1/7 of your entire capacity to store sugar. If the muscle cells were empty, and they're not, they're full, so the sugar is floating around in the bloodstream, and we've got to get rid of it or you will die. So to deal with all this sugar, the body produces insulin to move the sugar around and ultimately send the excess back to the liver to convert it into something you can store, which of course is fat. Insulin is a powerful, perhaps the most powerful hormone, with a primary purpose to manage sugar. It has to. Sugar is toxic. Insulin is actually an anabolic hormone, which means it is responsible for building things up or putting compounds into cells for storage, like storing fat. All of this should provide an obvious proof that the low carb is the healthiest and best method to burn fat and stay lean. Carbohydrates are sugars. They're non-essential, providing energy and nothing else. When you consume any energy-bearing carbohydrate, insulin is released. But what also happens is sugar takes priority over every other nutrient. So that means all fat burning stops the second you consume any sugary drink or juice, or whether you eat a candy bar or whole grain bread or cereal. Your body stops burning fat. Insulin prevents the body from burning fat. That's its number one job, is to deal with sugar. Only once the sugar is stored or converted to fat can fat burning resume. In layman's terms, all carbohydrates can be identified as sugar, with the exception of indigestible fiber. Sugars cause the pancreas to release insulin. Exactly how much insulin depends exactly on the source, meaning the glycemic impact on the blood sugar levels that the food produces. Let's review one more time. All nutrients pass through the liver. When sugar arrives, the liver initially and quickly converts the carbohydrates to a storage form of glucose called glycogen. As I said, glycogen is only capable of being stored in muscle cells and in very limited amounts in the liver. The glycogen flows through the bloodstream and is delivered to the muscles to be stored for future use as energy. But herein lies the problem. We don't move anymore, so the muscle cells are already full from the ridiculous amounts of carbohydrates we're consuming, well beyond our capacity, and when the muscle cells are full, the excess sugar or glycogen is sent back to the liver. With no alternative, the toxic sugary substance must be converted to triglycerides to be stored as fat. Now, with type 2 diabetes, the body does not produce enough insulin, or the person's cells are insulin resistant, so they must take a synthetic insulin. Insulin's job is to prevent blood sugar from elevating too high. Excess sugar is toxic. Without insulin, blood sugar would rise so high that the condition of metabolic acidosis would occur. This was the unfortunate fate of diabetics before the discovery of synthetic insulin. Unable to produce enough natural insulin, they would fall into a diabetic coma and/or die. Can you imagine the carnage that would exist in the world today had synthetic version of insulin not been discovered? The streets would be littered with comatose people and dead bodies. Or maybe, if insulin hadn't been discovered, we might actually eat healthier and stay more active to avoid diabetes. Why is this message of prevention being drowned out by the deep pockets of Big Pharma? Reducing or eliminating consumption of high glycemic and processed carbohydrates is likely the root cause. Highly processed carbohydrates, high fructose corn syrup, and please stop eating highly processed whole grain cereals that are the equivalent of eating candy for breakfast. Being insulin dependent for the rest of your life may be a great retirement plan for a drug company stockholder, but at best represents a slow death. It's not a cure. Diabetics continually risk the incidence of a coma, and as the disease advances, expect glaucoma, blindness, kidney failure, amputations, and death. Diabetes is currently the sixth leading cause of death in North America. I believe more than any other factor, managing insulin naturally through the foods we eat can determine your overall health, the rate at which you physically age, and ultimately, how long you will live. Insulin is the hunger hormone, and if you are unaware of insulin's addictive powers, a vicious cycle can easily ensue. Here's how. When we eat high glycemic carbohydrates like the kind commonly found in processed foods, insulin goes to work and does its job of lowering blood sugar so well that blood sugar can drop so low that it causes a junkie-like reaction, triggering cravings for more high carbohydrates foods. And the cycle can repeat itself over and over again, raising blood sugar, causing more insulin to be released, With nowhere to go with all the sugar, the liver gets taxed, and now it's in grave danger. The liver tries to keep up converting with all the excess carbs and triglycerides and stored as fat, but it begins to accumulate fat around that midsection, and that's metabolic syndrome X, a precursor to diabetes. All the sugar can also lead to a condition known as insulin resistance. The glycogen in the muscle cells remains full, especially if you are sedentary. You're not moving, so you're not spending your muscle's contents. In layman's terms, the muscles just get tired of being asked if they have more room for glycogen and become resistant to the persistence of insulin. The fat cells then become a homeless shelter for all this excess sugar that gets sent back to the liver to be converted into triglycerides and stored as accumulated body fat. And of course, your triglyceride levels will rise as well. Our body's inability to deal with the modern-day diets and lack of exercise has resulted in a newly named disease called metabolic syndrome. Sugar literally runs out of places to go, the liver gets tired of producing triglycerides, and fat begins to accumulate around the midsection, and the liver begins to fail. If blood sugar continues to rise beyond capacity of your ability to produce insulin, this will result in type 2 diabetes. And in the process, your liver becomes a French delicacy serving known as foie gras. That's French for fatty liver. The French delicacy, foie gras, or known as fatty liver, is created, as you guessed it, by force-feeding geese excess amounts of carbohydrates to destroy their liver. We humans are no different. You can see how this excess amount of sugar can explain the medical issues surrounding Miss Dean, but there's been a lot of talk about butter. Well, truth is, butter is the least of her problems. What's really happening is this overabundance of carbohydrates still equals energy, so no matter how much excess energy you have and you take in other nutrients, remember sugar takes priority, then you're going to have an abundance and it's always going to be stored as fat. So it wouldn't matter if it's butter or unquestionably healthy foods potentially are going to be converted into fat regardless of the source because you just simply have too much energy and, of course, too much sugar. Okay, we're going to take a break and we're going to continue with the topic of big pharmacy. The next topic is cholesterol and cholesterol drugs known as statins. Don't go away. You're listening to the Grant Roberts Unified Lifestyle Radio Show. Hi, I'm Grant Roberts. There is an omega-3 deficiency in the North American diet. Acenta is the omega-3 brand that I use and provide to all of my celebrity clients. Omega-3 is an essential nutrient, and the Acenta brand is the purest, highest quality, and best tasting omega-3 that I know. And I've tried them all. Now you can try it for yourself and feel the difference omega-3 can make to your life. For a limited time, you can save 50% on Acenta omega-3 products. Just visit my site, unifiedlifestyle.com, and click on the Acenta coupon. Like all good things, this offer won't last, so visit today and save 50% on any Acenta omega-3 product at unifiedlifestyle.com. Acenta, it's what's inside that matters.
You're listening to Grant Roberts' Unified Lifestyle on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to the Unified Lifestyle. Obviously, if you've been following my show, I promote what I call a unified lifestyle that encourages looking at your health comprehensively. Nutrition, exercise, rest, stress management, and of course, continuing education. If you'd like to hear any of the past shows, they're all available at unifiedlifestyle.com, as are a number of free apps, blogs, and my free body composition calculator, along with some great offers like omega-3 fatty acids on the radio page. You can receive 50% off your order of Acenta omega-3 oils shipped fresh and direct to your door. But let's talk about omega-3s for a moment. Most of the public have heard of omega-3s, but many are still surprised to find out that omega-3s are actually a type of fat, an essential fatty acid. They are unquestionably a healthy and vital nutrient. Omega-3s are an essential component to health that is lacking in the North American diet. So do consume this healthy category of fat every day. This leads me to my next topic surrounding myths, or busting myths. Two categories of an essential property to human health continue to be much maligned. That's fat and cholesterol. Fat, thanks to the idiotic low-fat diet craze that began in the 1980s, continues to be the worst nutritional experiment ever perpetuated on man. As a whole, we've eaten less fat and consumed more carbs, just like the USDA orchestrated, and we are fatter than ever. And like my previous topic, diabetes is now rampant, to such a degree that they had to change the name of adult-onset diabetes to type 2 diabetes because it's common in children. And that is because of a poor diet and lack of exercise. The other word that has been demonized is cholesterol. And of course, drug companies have a big megaphone touting the dangers and encouraging everyone to talk to their doctors and consider taking a cholesterol-reducing drug. Again, not a cure, but a lifelong and highly profitable product consumers can take for the rest of their life. So, what is cholesterol? What's its purpose? And why are we so worried about it? Drug companies backed by the USDA, FDA, and even heart, diabetes, and cancer organizations continue to promote reducing saturated fats and cholesterol in our diet. Well, any nutritionist or food scientist knows there is little, if any, correlation between cholesterol in the foods we eat to cholesterol in our bloodstream. In fact, quite the contrary. Elevated cholesterol is not related to consuming cholesterol at all. Cholesterol in food, however, is only found in animal products. So when we talk about saturated fats and cholesterol, we are usually talking about animal sources like meat, seafood, dairy products, and egg yolks. The exception is saturated fat. Some plants can be high in saturated fats, such as coconut or palm oils. And again, cholesterol is only found in animal products. Unfortunately, I'm unaware of any sound evidence to support the prevalent advice to reduce cholesterol in a diet. There is, however, a substantial amount of evidence that says the opposite is actually true, that eating natural saturated fat actually lowers the risk of heart disease, and there is little, if any, correlation to eating cholesterol to the levels of cholesterol in the human body. The planet's preeminent universities that do consider all things also support that the evidence is clear. Carbohydrates are the primary cause of obesity, diabetes, certain cancers, and can be responsible for inflammation and arterial plaque buildup, which can narrow an artery enough to slow or block blood flow, which causes heart attacks. Here's the thing. Don't you find it just the slightest bit curious that man survived on a diet high in saturated fat and cholesterol for 3 million years, yet inexplicably, in the last handful of decades, it has suddenly become hazardous to our health? Are we to believe that it's just a coincidence that the introduction of processed vegetable oils laden with man-made trans fats via the process of hydrogenation, which of course manipulates the chemical makeup of the vegetable oil to extend the shelf life of foods for profit? Maybe that has something to do with it. Or the current overwhelming consumption of processed foods, which has recently become the staple of the typical diet. Is it really just a matter of sheer chance that there appears to be a direct correlation between this new technology in food and the plague of widespread degenerative and deadly disease like we've never seen before in history? While the USDA and FDA each promise to give advice based on the best available science, the advice they are dispensing is usually contrary to those of the very institutions of higher learning. Researchers from University of Maryland analyzed data and found that vegetable fat consumption was directly correlated with cancer and animal fat was not. Over the last 30 years, American men have followed the USDA and FDA's advice and collectively have decreased their intake of saturated fat by 14%, but subsequently increased their carbohydrate intake by 23%, and yet rates of obesity and heart disease continue to escalate. Another study conducted by Harvard that must have eluded the USDA and FDA suggests that people who had the highest intake of saturated fat also had the least plaque buildup on their artery walls, concluding that carbohydrates make people fat, which leads to heart disease. In yet another study of 235 postmenopausal women conducted by Harvard over a three-year period examined the daily diets and coronary artery conditions. The results showed that the women who had regularly eaten the highest amounts of saturated fat had the least amount of additional plaque buildup in their arteries. And the women with the highest amount of carbohydrates in their diet over the 3 years had the most plaque buildup. The USDA and FDA, who allegedly take an oath to provide the latest and greatest information available, can't even pretend to know that any of this information is new. As far back as 1926, when an intrepid explorer named Stephenson was published in the American Journal of Medicine, he spent 11 years living with the Eskimos, following an all-meat diet with no adverse effects of any kind. Medical authorities questioned the validity of his findings, so in 1928, Stephenson and a colleague of his, Dr. Anderson, agreed to reenact the study and isolated themselves for one full year in Bellevue Hospital to substantiate under strict medical conditions the effects of eating meat exclusively for one full year. Doctors from Harvard, Cornell, Johns Hopkins universities were all there, and a number of other institutes, and they were all there to observe the two men as they ate nothing but meat for one full year in a clinical setting. The results were published in 1930 in the Journal of Biological Chemistry. There was no deficiency problems. The two men remained perfectly healthy with reduced body fat, increased physical stamina, increased metabolic rate, and healthy blood cholesterol levels. It was concluded that the absence of starchy and sugary carbohydrates from their diet appeared to have nothing but good effects. Now, the real issue today is that the meat has changed. So while this study with Stephenson shows that eating an all-meat diet was certainly healthy, back then, meat had all the nutrients it needs. Now, even the cattle are being raised on a deficient diet, meaning they're all being grain-fed, which is not a natural source of nutrition even for the cattle. So we're seeing this grain infiltrate our society. Not only are humans consuming it, but the food that we're eating is consuming it, and we're seeing this great deficiency, and of course, it's ending in disease. As for cholesterol, it too remains much maligned and misunderstood. Cholesterol is a vital component of good health. Cholesterol is found in all the body's tissues and comprises an integral part of the cell membrane and is essential for the production of nerve and brain tissue. There is little, if any, correlation to cholesterol we eat to the amount of cholesterol in our blood. On average, 75% of the blood cholesterol is manufactured in the liver, the same place excess carbs get sent to be converted into fat for storage, since we have a limited capacity to store the excess carbs. Cholesterol even forms important hormones, such as estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, cortisol, and others to support and promote normal growth. Without cholesterol, our cells would collapse and we would die. Take the perfect example of human milk. Not cow's milk, human milk. What's better than that? Human milk is loaded with saturated fat and cholesterol. Why? Because it provides us with the nourishment we need for normal growth as newborns. There's nothing more fundamental. So, milk is a perfect example, of course. Human milk, not cow's milk. I think everything, including cholesterol, is a matter of balance. And that is precisely how I explain the role of cholesterol. We produce what is commonly referred to as good and bad cholesterol. I believe that cholesterol actually acts similarly to that of an antioxidant, which would explain why cholesterol levels increase as we age. High serum cholesterol levels is simply an indication that cholesterol has joined the fight to protect against heart disease, actually assisting in the fight against free radicals. It's my opinion that these levels, whether they be good or bad, may be more of an indicator about whether the battle is being won or lost. Personally, I believe that the triglyceride levels in the blood is a much better indicator as to the person's risk than focusing on cholesterol. Regardless, there remains a general fixation on cholesterol in the diet as a major cause of heart disease, likely because Big Pharma has something to say on the matter. With the pill for every problem, drug manufacturers decided to promote the theory that lowering cholesterol through long-term medication was not only lucrative but could be prescribed to virtually anyone under the pretense of reducing the risk of heart disease. And I mean anyone. Children are now being targeted as candidates for long-term cholesterol drug use. Couple that with the continued promotion of the low-fat diet experiment, which only amplifies the risk of heart disease, then these drug companies are sitting pretty because they have this incredible, probably long-term management plan. Soon, everyone is a potential candidate for drugs that we know as statins, the cholesterol-lowering drugs. There's only one tiny little problem. If only statins didn't kill people, then the drug company manufacturers would have the perfect plan. To hear more about this, stay tuned. We're going to come right back and talk about statins. You're listening to the Grant Roberts Unified Lifestyle Radio Show. Hi, I'm Grant Roberts. There is an omega-3 deficiency in the North American diet. Acenta is the omega-3 brand that I use and provide to all of my celebrity clients. Omega-3 is an essential nutrient, and the Acenta brand is the purest, highest quality, and best tasting omega-3 that I know. And I've tried them all. Now you can try it for yourself and feel the difference omega-3 can make to your life. For a limited time, you can save 50% on Acenta Omega-3 products. Just visit my site, unifiedlifestyle.com, and click on the Acenta coupon. Like all good things, this offer won't last, so visit today and save 50% on any Acenta Omega-3 product at unifiedlifestyle.com. Acenta, it's what's inside that matters.
Welcome back to Grant Roberts' Unified Lifestyle on Talk Radio 790 KABC. To talk to Grant live on the air, call 1-800-222-KABC.
Welcome back to the Unified Lifestyle. Today's show, we're talking a lot about drug companies and their influence on people and health. And at the end of the last segment, if you caught it, we left with the statement that statins represent perhaps the perfect circle for drug companies' profitability, and it would be the perfect plan if only statins didn't kill people. Well, check any Fortune 500 list and you will see that pharmaceutical manufacturers remain at the top. And the category of statins or cholesterol-reducing drugs lead sales measured in the billions and billions of dollars. Consumption of cholesterol drugs is heavily promoted, advertised on TV and radio more than beer at the Super Bowl. there's only one little problem in the battle against cholesterol and heart disease. You might have caught it if you were able to comprehend the part of the commercial where the announcer's voice lists a multitude of dangerous potential side effects. The most popular cholesterol drug campaigns promote the use of statins to protect the heart, and most ads even show a big, bold picture of a heart as a primary graphic. Of the long list of contraindications and risks associated with taking their product, drug companies always point to the fact that statins may cause muscle cramping or weakness, and the fact that statins are known to be harmful to muscles, causing them to break down. Now, the last time I checked my anatomy book, the heart was listed as a muscle. If that's what a statin is supposed to protect, why are the contraindications saying that they may break down muscle tissue? Remember, cholesterol is an integral part of our cells, and yes, statin drugs absolutely reduce cholesterol indiscriminate of source. What that means is that they don't pinpoint cholesterol in the bloodstream, but instead reduce cholesterol everywhere. Well, that's a problem. Without cholesterol, we would lose the rigidity of all of our cells, and our cells would collapse, and we would die. Motivated solely by profit, drug manufacturers are actually lobbying the FDA to make statins available without a prescription, allowing the public to make a decision based on a 30-second pharmaceutical infomercial where life is depicted as carefree as a feminine protection ad. There is even talk about adding statins to the water supply. Let me read you a past press release regarding the people who make Lipitor, the number one selling statin drug. Pfizer announced that it has cut off all clinical trials and development work for a cholesterol drug that was supposed to be a star product because of an unexpected number of deaths and cardiovascular problems among patients who used it. I wonder just how many an unexpected number of deaths are, and what exactly is an acceptable number of deaths. Drug companies stay highly profitable by keeping prescription prices high, promoting consumption through advertising, and spending minimal amounts on R&D. Here's an example of how drug companies are allowed to influence consumers with some of that R&D. This is the very bold print of an ad promoting the use of a statin, we all know, Lipitor, made by Pfizer. It says, Lipitor reduces the risk of heart attacks by 36%. Wow, that sounds impressive. But there's an asterisk beside the 36%. Wonder what that means. That, of course, means there's more to this story. The more to this story in this case can be found in the small print at the bottom of the ad. It says the results were based on the findings, and I quote, of a large study. But what they don't tell you was that the study was conducted over 3 1/3 years. What they do say is that the results in reality showed that 3% of high-risk patients who took a sugar pill over the course of the study suffered a heart attack, compared to 2% of the patients who took Lipitor. Let me say that again. 3% of the patients who took a sugar pill had a heart attack. 2% of the patients who took Lipitor had a heart attack. That's one person for every 100. That's how they got 36%. That's the asterisk. 3 out of 100 people on a sugar pill had a heart attack, and 2 out of 100 people taking Lipitor had a heart attack. That's how they got 36% on big bold print saying how it reduces heart attacks. One person out of 100. Now, admittedly, my math skills aren't fantastic, but that's a 1% difference. Now, the real question is, why did the FDA allow them to make this big claim and saying that between 2 and 3 people is 36%? Well, the obvious truth is it was a 1% difference from a placebo. And what the FDA should have done is stepped in and not allowed them to use that 36% with a giant asterisk that is very, very misleading to the public. What the ad should have said is that 99 people out of 100 showed no measurable benefit whatsoever by taking Lipitor. Perhaps that's why the study was conveniently cut to 3 1/3 years. Maybe more Lipitor patients would have had heart attacks the next month. Now, statins come with a lot more contraindications, such as muscle pain, cognitive impairment, even sexual dysfunction. But don't worry, Pfizer has a solution for that too. You gotta hand it to them. They've got the bases covered and they're competing with themselves. The Coke-Pepsi challenge has been replaced by Pfizer competing itself between hard-ons and heart attacks. Now, don't get me wrong. It's possible that a select few individuals that have a serious genetic defect can actually warrant through medication and statins. But that is clearly not the mass majority. So please pay attention to the small print and remember the placebo did just as well as using statins without the contraindications. And of course, they were using sugar, which is part of the problem in a placebo. Now, here's the other real problem is that they're starting to target children with statins. Now, targeting children with statins is a despicable new low. Now, Truth be told, it's easy to point fingers and blame the government and drug companies, but we've got to start blaming ourselves or taking responsibility. We've got to dump this Paula Deen mindset and start looking at making lifestyle changes instead of depending on a drug company to solve the problems for us. The mindset that exercise and eating nutritiously and living a unified lifestyle, that's a solution. We must educate ourselves and we must take responsibility for our actions. Society continues to demand for solutions in pill form, and drug companies are all too happy to fill that order. It's imperative that the dispensing of statins remain in the educated and ethical hands of doctors. So we need to ensure that this, in fact, is the case. Doctors need to continue their education and advocate the benefits of preventative measures of exercise and nutrition, and of course, rest and recovery, and all of the factors in the unified lifestyle, and not rely on sales calls and free trips from pharmaceutical companies soliciting the next top-selling drug. And of course, for you or anyone you know taking cholesterol drugs, talk to your doctor first about options. Don't just stop taking them. Personally, I can't imagine how any physician could in good conscience prescribe an adult statin drugs without first promoting lifestyle management. But it's unbelievable to me to think about prescribing it to a child without at least looking at the root causes. If the habits of poor nutrition and lack of exercise are not corrected, the chances of an obese child developing into a lean, healthy, and active adult is highly improbable. Thomas Edison may have said it best, if the doctors of today will not become the nutritionists of tomorrow, the nutritionists of today will become the doctors of tomorrow. Food should be our drug of choice. Capable of eliciting specific drug-like responses, I believe the best method to combat heart disease is to be active and to eat a balanced diet of all the essential nutrients in optimum amounts. For more information, visit unifiedlifestyle.com and review the 10 steps to healthy living. We'll be right back to answer another listener's question, and that is, why are we so sore the next day after beginning an exercise program? That answer, when we come back. Hi, I'm Grant Roberts. There is an omega-3 deficiency in the North American diet. Acenta is the omega-3 brand that I use and provide to all of my celebrity clients. Omega-3 is an essential nutrient, and the Acenta brand is the purest, highest quality, and best-tasting omega-3 that I know. And I've tried them all. Now you can try it for yourself and feel the difference omega-3 can make to your life. For a limited time, you can save 50% on Acenta omega-3 products. Just visit my site, unifiedlifestyle.com, and click on the Acenta coupon. Like all good things, this offer won't last, so visit today and save 50% on any Acenta omega-3 product at unifiedlifestyle.com. Acenta, it's what's inside that matters.
You're listening to Grant Roberts' Unified Lifestyle on Talk Radio 790 KABC. To talk to Grant live on the air, call 1-800-222-KABC.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Grant Roberts Unified Lifestyle Radio Show. Now, for more information on the show or you want to catch past shows, again, go to unifiedlifestyle.com and click on the radio page, and you'll see a list of podcasts. They're also available on iTunes. When you're at the website, you'll also find a number of freebies. We've got free apps, we've got free blogs, and we've got a free body composition calculator that will help you identify your exact body composition, which will define how much muscle mass you have and your body fat percentage. These are really important tools when deciding to create a nutrition and exercise program so you can gauge your results. Now, that leads to our next question. Obviously, it's that time of year, and people are getting back to the gym, and a lot of people for the very first time. So our listener's question was, why does it hurt so much the day after I train? When I left the gym, I felt fantastic. Well, to answer that question, and this is something we've all experienced. We've all done it. Doesn't matter if you're a first-time trainer or you've taken a long break and you make your way back to the gym, you do experience what's called post-exercise soreness or delayed onset muscle soreness. And you ask yourself that very question. How did this happen? I felt so great when I left the gym yesterday. Well, post-exercise soreness, or as I said, delayed onset muscle soreness, is a phenomenon that occurs thanks to our innate and primitive survival mechanism known as our fight or flight reflex. Now, you may not realize that this is what's going on, but take, for example, you walk into the gym and you start exercising. And before you know it, you're pleasantly surprised because you've got an increased amount of blood and oxygen that's being delivered to your brain and your muscles, and you're starting to go, you know what, this doesn't feel too bad. Actually, it feels pretty good. Now, what's happening is that you've activated a burst of chemicals that don't actually differentiate if you're in a fight for your life or you're actually just trying to improve your quality of life by voluntarily subjecting yourself to an acute bout of stress. That, of course, is exercise. Stress is exercise. Now, as I said, your brain really does not differentiate between the types of stress. There's no time to evaluate the situation. It doesn't know if you're running for your life or you're grabbing a barbell. Now, what's happening is that the automated survival response is initiated, both psychologically, as we talked about earlier in today's segments, pharmacologically, where we're now promoting chemicals that are, or drug-like chemicals that are going to the brain. The difference is that these are chemicals that we manufacture to mask pain and actually create some form of euphoria, the endorphins that we all know about and have heard about through exercise demands. So you end up leaving the gym feeling pretty good. But the next day is a completely different matter entirely. The brain and the central nervous system did their jobs, meaning you survived the workout. Now, to be technical, what you actually survived physiologically resulted in microscopic tears in your muscles. Now, that's a good thing. Microscopic tears are the key to growth and why we exercise. Now, the benefits or the results of why we exercise is what we exercise physiologists call the adaptation process. We ultimately grow bigger and stronger, provided we provide the nutrients and the rest and recovery needed to do so. So I encourage you all to adopt the philosophy that muscle growth is quite literally a matter of survival. And, you know, as I alluded to, the human body is pre-programmed with one mission, survive at all costs. Now, that's the overall principle also behind muscle growth. It's actually quite simple when you consider really how complex muscles really are. Muscles grow as a natural adaptive response. When a muscle cell experiences stress, like that of a load being placed upon it during weight training, well, these microscopic tears that I talked about, they occur in the fibers and the internal elements of the cell. Basically, protein and glucose reserves begin to break down. Now, the more intense the exercise, the more tissue damage or the more breakdown that you're going to have in the muscle cells. Now, that's a great thing, but don't go too far. Obviously, if you have some form of catastrophic failure, meaning a macro tear or a large muscle tear, that's going to debilitate you for a very long time, and that's not going to heal overnight. So obviously, take your time. Now, if you do exercise right and you do provide the nutrients and the time to recover, well, what happens is the muscle recovers and it emerges bigger, better, stronger, faster, and better prepared for the future. That's why we do it. As for the myth of how muscles grow, well, if you think muscles grow in a gym, well, that's almost a bit of a myth. In fact, it's exactly the opposite that's true. While strenuous exercise obviously causes the muscles to break down, now you can obviously recognize that while you are in the gym, that extra blood is being sent into the muscles, and it's basically an emergency response that the body's doing, and it creates the illusion of growth or a pump. But that's really temporary. That's not growth. Growth, or the potential for increasing muscular size, only occurs after you leave the gym. That's where delivering the nutrients are important, and of course, the rest. Now, this is really a two-part question. So the second part is, now you've developed this muscle, now hanging onto it becomes the next great challenge. And that leads to the second question is, well, why am I so sore the first time that I train, but as time goes by, I'm not so sore? Well, that's adaptation. So you are becoming more used to it, but also you've got to continue to push yourself to that same extent and level to create this kind of growth. And that's where it gets very, very challenging for most people. Now, maintenance is a much simpler proposition, and it really doesn't require pushing yourself to the degree, but you always, always have to tax the muscles. Otherwise, they're going to atrophy. Now, some of you may ask, what's atrophy? Well, whether you say atrophy or sarcopenia or wasting or even aging, those are all basically the wasting of muscle or the muscle becoming catabolic and breaking down. So the simple theory for that one is move it or lose it. The body will ruthlessly erase and wipe out all of your hard work if you do not continue to challenge your muscle fibers on a regular basis. In fact, it's pretty common knowledge that if you don't use your muscle for, say, 2 weeks, that's when atrophy really kicks in. Take, for example, if you're wearing a cast or if you've broken your arm. You know that when the cast comes off, you've lost all that muscle mass. Why? Because the muscles were not engaged and the body has one goal in life, two goals in life. One is to survive. But the other goal, which is to aid survival, which is to store fat and be as economical as possible. Now, muscle is very metabolically expensive. So if you want to burn body fat, then have more muscle. That's the way the body works. But that fights against the body's natural tendency to do so, because what the body wants to do is shed muscle and store fat. So we've got this inner battle going on all the time. So that's where we've got to engage our brains and know that this is what's going on. And that's why we've got to go out into the gym and push and build and create muscle so that we can always combat our own self. It's a war against ourselves. So let me share with you 7 solutions to minimize muscle onset soreness. Now, it's not a bad thing, but let's face it, the first time you train, you're going to be sore. That's just the rules. So what you can do, make sure that you're hydrated, number one. Never underestimate the power of water. maintaining optimum hydration during and after exercise is vitally important for muscle function. Now, I definitely want to be hydrated throughout the entire workout, but one little trick I'll share with you is a hot black coffee. Now, I know a coffee is a bit of a diuretic, but I'm not talking about hydration in this sense. I'm talking about coffee is actually also a thermogenic, which means it increases your body temperature. It also improves your perceived rate of exertion, so it will help you power through that workout, but be very careful. Do not overdo it the first time you do. Number two on the list is never stretch before exercising. Cold muscles are very prone to injury. You want to warm up or pre-activate. That's very different from stretching. So what you want to do is whatever the motion you're going to do is, go through it, gradually increase the weight until you're ready to actually engage yourself in the workout. But do stretch, number three, between sets. Now, this is one of the best ways to reduce muscle onset soreness, and that is stretching between and after working out. Again, don't stretch before, but once you're warm, stretch. And stretching also helps promote flexibility within the muscle, and the more flexible you are, the more power you will generate. Number four on the list is after the workout, feed the muscle. The only way the muscle is going to grow if you provide the nutrients that it needs to repair itself. So you want to make sure that you are providing plenty of protein, but there is a trick you can do where time becomes an issue, and that is immediately following training. And we talked about this earlier in the show when we talked about diabetes and insulin and all those roles. Well, as I said, insulin is an anabolic hormone. So this is the one and only time you actually want to increase your insulin levels, and that is immediately following a workout. So you might want to take some dextrose and water and a scoop of protein. You can take it with you in the gym. You can buy dextrose at any winemaking store for nothing. It's sugar. It's cheap. Mix that all together and drink that immediately after your workout, and that will cause insulin to rise, which shuts off cortisol. That's your stress hormone. And it will promote healing by sending the protein right into the muscle cells. So that's a great tip and trick that you can do. Also, within 1 or 2 hours after working out, get a nice meal. Also, again, serving around protein. Now, the other thing you want to consider nutritionally is that post-exercise soreness is actually a form of inflammation. So omega-3s are one of the most potent anti-inflammatories on the planet. So make sure you take your omega-3s every day. Number five on the list is rest and recovery. In bed is definitely where the magic happens. Get your mind out of the gutter. I'm talking about sleep. This is the key to growth, and this is where muscles grow. So delayed onset muscle soreness sometimes can last 24 to 48 hours. If it lasts longer than that, you probably went a little too hard. So dial it back. Number six, let's assume you did dial it too hard and your muscles are actually warm or hot to the touch. Well, that is inflammation at its finest, and the solution to that is an ice bath. Jump in the tub, fill it with ice, and that is the best way to reduce immediate inflammation and swelling. And last on the list, number seven is massage. Reward yourself with a massage if pain persists. And if it doesn't, pretend it does and get a massage anyways. Well, that's it for this edition of the Unified Lifestyle. Go to unifiedlifestyle.com to learn more or hear any of the past shows. Next week, my guest will be the million-dollar baby herself, Hillary Swank. So until then, remember, everything is going to work out.
The preceding program was brought to you by Unified Lifestyle and sponsored in part by Acenta Health. The information presented in this show is not intended to provide medical advice and is not necessarily the view of Talk Radio 790 KABC. Always seek your physician's approval before making any lifestyle changes.